You are listening to Studying Pixels, a podcast on game studies and video game culture. I'm Stefan Heinrich Simond, a game studies scholar from Germany.
I'm Dan Hughes, a Japanese scholar from Texas.
And you can find us every Sunday on studyingpixels.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Today it's time for a little bit of a special episode. So we are not going to do our usual side quests. We're going to have one topic that we talk about. Sometimes we do this just for fun, because it's entertaining to talk about video games that apparently do not exist.
Yes. I've been looking forward to this since we came up with this idea. This is one of my favorite things to do. I don't know how productive it is, but I'll tell you what, I get a lot out of it.
When I was a child, I always liked to come up with video games that I would love to play, video games that I would come up in my head with, and that I would literally think about how they would feel, how they would play. I would make up cutscenes. I love to write stories, and honestly, it's still one of the things that I would like to do is make an actual game.
Yeah.
Or contribute to making an actual game. I've fumbled around with Twine a little bit, but today we're going to talk about only games that do not exist, at least not in the way that we're going to talk about them. We're just going to make stuff up.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The double-edged sword of doing this is that it's a lot of fun to talk about, and listeners, I imagine at the end of this conversation, you'll say, oh man, I'm sad that they're not around, these games.
Hey, we're going to pitch you some things, and maybe, who knows, in the future, it might come true. The rules were to come up with these titles, that each of us brings 5 mashups that do not exist. So these are either... It could be a game or a series that does exist, but we reimagine it as if it were made by a different development team. Or it might alternatively be the case that we basically just put together 2 different video games or 2 different video game series and say, wouldn't it be cool if we saw something like this? It's not unprecedented in the history of video game culture. We know that such things happen, like Elden Ring, where it's all about, hey, what would happen if we had From Software cooperate with George R.R. Martin? Who knows? We're recording this show before Elden Ring comes out. If you hear it, it's probably after. So, well, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? Shall I start with my first proposal here? My first pitch?
Go for it.
Okay. So my very first thought, as I thought about what kind of games would I like to see done by a different development studio, is a series that I very much enjoy, but I don't really enjoy that many games in this series, if I'm being very honest. And this is Pokemon.
Yes.
I would love to see Pokemon made by Level 5 Games. This is my dream. Because the thing is, for me... Like, I acknowledge that Pokemon is one of the most iconic and also economically successful franchises in the world. Pokemon is huge and has accompanied me since my childhood, since I was like, I don't know, 12 years old maybe. And I really loved the first instances of Pokemon games. I played them like all day long. I was completely lost in this world. I watched the anime series, which I rewatched recently, at least the first couple of episodes.
Still funny.
I was like... Wow. That was really cheaply produced, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was, but it gave us the gem of, we can't let American or I guess European children know about onigiri. So these are jelly donuts. Thank you, Brock.
Ah, jelly donuts. Is that how they translated it?
Onigiri? Yeah, so it's, they, you know, little rice balls, and Brock would make them for Ash and Misty, and every time they had them, they would say, these jelly donuts are delicious.
Not that the Western children come know to any ideas is. About eating actual, like, seaweed or something.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Now, the thing is, though, that as the Pokemon series progressed, it kind of declined, in my perception. It got very repetitive. There are constantly, like, new Pokemon coming out. I can't keep track of it at all. Like, I've completely lost sight of the roster of Pokemon that exist. For me, I know of the first 120-something or 150-something.
Yeah.
And the other ones, it's, like, very select. I have very selective knowledge of it. And the last game I played in the series was Pokemon Sword. I always felt like Pokemon Sword, it's not a bad game at all, Sword and Shield. Oh, sorry, wait, I played Shield. Yes, I have Shield, not Sword. So I enjoyed these games very much. It was fun, but the Pokemon series at that point just became kind of stale to me. And I feel like Game Freak, the development studio, the original development studio of the Pokemon games, kind of is... I don't know. I don't want to say they put in little effort, but they put in a lot of effort in new Pokemon, but not really in making an actually engaging game world with interesting mechanics, with an interesting story or interesting characters. It's all kind of just centered around, you have to find these new 100-something Pokemon cute. And that's kind of what it felt to me. You know, can you relate to this feeling?
Yeah, I can. I think so. I had a very similar experience. We've talked about it. I love Pokemon growing up, and I think I stuck with it longer than you did a little bit, because Gold and Silver are very precious to me. In fact, my first, like, meta-analysis moment from a video game comes from Gold and Silver, when the final boss of Gold is you from Red and Blue. That blew my mind as a kid. But I do kind of think that's where the innovation stopped a little bit. And yeah, I've talked before about how I always give them a try, because I hold Pokemon so near and dear to my heart. So I always give them a try. And if there's not a hook that keeps me going, then you're right. It is kind of just, okay, well, there's some new Pokemon and the story's basically the same. The setup is basically the same. Arceus is very different. We'll talk about that at some point. But yeah, they do get stale pretty quickly, especially as you get older, I think.
Yeah, but to be fair, I mean, you've played Arceus, so you've got a glimpse into the future of the Pokemon series. I haven't played that game yet. I'd only know of your impressions, and I know of the reviews that I've watched and read, which I found interesting, yet at the same time still felt like it's cool, there's some innovations in there, but it still kind of falls short of what I would want of a Pokemon, or what I could see a Pokemon game to be.
I think that my stance on it would be, Sword and Shield is the culmination of what I would call the old Pokemon formula. It's, I think, the best version of Pokemon, and it did a lot of things right. Like, it cut down the number of Pokemon that were available so that you had a doable Pokedex again. The music is great. The story is fun. The characters are well written. It feels like a really good Pokemon game. Arceus feels like the first step in a brand new direction. And it's not perfect. It's not crazy, but it's... there's glimmers of, wow, the next one could be really something special.
Yeah, it's, from what I understand correctly, it's not a Breath of the Wild in the sense that it's the pinnacle of the series, but it's more like it's an experimental step in a direction which will come to fruition over time.
Yes, I would say it kind of feels like, this is a weird comparison, but it's the first one that came to mind. It feels like Persona 3. Okay, a lot of cool ideas. You're not Persona 4 yet.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, okay. I understand that. And at the same time, I think we have got such a fantastic development team, such as Level 5 Games. Yeah. I really love them. They are amazing. They made Ni No Kuni, for example. Mm. They also made Dragon Quest, which is a long-running series. So Level 5 Games is one of the most established and skilled and qualified and just fascinating development studios when it comes to JRPGs. Mm. they've paired with, I don't know his name, but the person who makes the designs for Dragon Ball.
Akira Toriyama.
Yes.
Yep.
For the Dragon Quest series. Mm. And they've worked with Studio Ghibli, for Ni no Kuni. So they are very well versed in cooperating with people or like other kind of creative minds that influence the kind of look and feel of the games, or more look than feel, I suppose. And I could imagine, just imagine how it would be. Pokemon. It's just called Pokemon, the game.
Yeah. Oh,
Pokemon
cool.
By level 5 games. And they apply all the knowledge that they have from their previous RPGs, because we know that in Ni no Kuni, for example, you have an expansive system where you can acquire familiars which can join your party and you fight with them. Amazing. In my mind, Ni no Kuni is kind of the better Pokemon game, if I'm being very honest.
Yeah, it definitely, I think, makes the relationship between you and those little creatures feel a lot more precious. Pokemon has a lot of different ways to do that with the like affinity system and, you know, petting them and all that stuff. But something about Ni no Kuni, like winning them over instead of just beating them up, is kind of lovely. And man, the other thing to point out too, Ni no Kuni, both games, 1 and 2, Revenant Kingdom, have such a heart to them in their story. To see a Pokemon story told with that level of storytelling that Level 5 implemented with the Studio Ghibli connection, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's probably the crucial thing that I'm missing, because the Pokemon games, they are supposed to be pretty accessible. They are supposed to be pretty simplistic when it comes to its combat. And I can understand that they are games made for, well, let's say all ages.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think that Level 5 games could pull this off, but engross it in a kind of world and imbue it with characters and with a sense of heart and the sense of presence in that world that would be, to me, a lot more interesting and appealing than all the other Pokemon games we've seen so far. So for me, my big wish is make Pokemon by Level 5 games. Now, this is, of course, not going to happen, because the thing is that this is a Nintendo franchise, and
yeah.
Level 5 games is a multi-platform development studio. Technically, it would be possible that they would do it, but, well, I mean, we'll see. We'll see about it. It would be my personal wish. It would be kind of, that's what I would love a Pokemon game to be. That's where I think the potential of the series truly lies. It's unfortunate that I can't see Game Freak realizing that potential anymore, because I think they laid the foundation and they made so many games that I think maybe they should move on to make something else while Level 5 Games gets a shot at making a true, expansive, huge Pokemon JRPG.
I would love to play it.
Coming out next summer.
All right, well, from the sublime to the ridiculous, my first one is I want to see Resident Evil get the Metal Gear Rising Revengeance treatment. And what I mean by this is, you have a series, Metal Gear Solid, Hideo Kojima's great series, right? And it's silly, but for the most part, you know, it's a very serious kind of story. It's very long. There's a lot of parts to it. Then you have Metal Gear Rising Revengeance come in, and it's just like an explosion of character and crazy cutscenes and incredible combat. It was made by Platinum Games, so it feels great to play. There is a feeling amongst the Resident Evil community that Resident Evil reached a fever pitch of, this is too actiony, this is silly, right? Resident Evil 4 kind of rode the line perfectly. Resident Evil 5 comes out. You have Chris Redfield punching boulders and Wesker screaming at him and all this stuff. And then 6, who knows what happened with that game, right?
Yeah, with zombie shock.
Yeah, right. So we're seeing kind of a renaissance of Resident Evil, where it's going back to its survival horror roots with Biohazard and Village. And I love that direct. Mm. But I would love a game that embraces the silliness of Resident Evil to the point that Metal Gear Rising Revengeance did. I think the tone of that in the world of Resident Evil, with insane action and Dead Rising style weapon combinations and all this stuff, that would be a lot of fun to play.
I think you're on a good track there, because especially since Resident Evil is so much focused now on being a first-person survival horror game that is, well, it is serious to a certain degree. Its storytelling is more dramatic, its character development more organic, even though they have over-the-top characters. But still, it seems more, well, grounded relative to what Resident Evil is. I think it leaves an open gap for such a thing like a horror, slasher, over-the-top, I don't know, anime-style Resident Evil kind of thing. And Platinum Games would be excellent for that, I think.
They would. And I think also, I have a real fondness for Japanese-developed games that take place in America because it's a particular kind of view at American culture and history and how we react to things. Resident Evil, I think, is a really great series for that because it's as if I always felt like Resident Evil shows a view of the world where America is the B-movie of the world.
Yeah.
Where it's silly action, it's cheesy horror, but there's some kind of heart to it that you feel, which I guess is a optimistic view of the American outlook. But I think that given the story of Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, where the main villain is a senator that gets beefy and just punches the living daylights out of Raiden, I think it would be a very fun satire of American culture.
I would play that. I would play that. Is it going to be like called Resident Evil Revengeance or something?
Resident Evil Remageddon. That's what it would be.
Remageddon.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Renesis. Oh, you know, Renesis, but the R-E stands for Resident
Evil. Resident Evil, yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun. And I guess this is my shout out to Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, which is one of my favorite games because it exists in the world of Metal Gear Solid. And it just, that disconnect to me is so beautiful. I love it so much.
Yeah, but that's a really good point because the thing is that there was indeed something there in the silliness of Resident Evil. While I would say that they made the right decision of going in a completely different direction with Biohazard and Village, I must say I enjoyed also this kind of over-the-top action of at least Resident Evil 5 for a bit. It went on way too long, but yes. And Resident Evil 6 a bit as well. I played both of these games in co-op mode, and it was fun. Like, it was not scary at all. It was completely silly and fun. And I think going into that direction and just doubling down instead of basically kind of being held back by the idea that it must somehow be still a horror game that could truly liberate this part of what Resident Evil is.
Exactly.
I also have got a proposal for Platinum Games.
Yes.
Interesting that both of us thought of Platinum Games. Probably because, I mean, they are one of the most high-profile studios when it comes to Japanese over-the-top action games.
They also feel like, hey, you got a product that you're not sure how it's going to do. Get Platinum on it. That'll probably boost it.
Yeah, they'll do it. They'll do it somehow. And the thing is, they made games such as Nier Automata, right? That's also Platinum Games.
Yep.
Nier Automata, Astral Chain, Bayonetta, of course, and I think a very underappreciated title of theirs is Vanquish. I don't know.
Oh, what yeah.
Do you know Vanquish?
Yes. Yeah. Vanquish is great.
It is a kind of space shooter where you are this hard-boiled dude. And you can't. I remember that back in the day when I played it, I just chuckled while playing this game. It's like bullets are flying everywhere and you can like dodge, roll and jump around and shoot at everything. You can like jump behind an obstacle or leap behind an obstacle and go into cover. And then in order to distract the machines that you're fighting, you can just casually light a cigarette, take a couple of drags, and then you flick it out of the obstacle, and the machines detect movement, and they shoot at the cigarette butt while you're basically storming at them in slow motion.
It's great.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful game. Vanquish. It was so over the top. And I think Platinum Games has a lot of potential, which is why I would like to see them do Devil May Cry. Because we all know...
Your favorite.
Yes. Because the thing is that I always maintain the stance that Devil May Cry, the best Devil May Cry that exists is the Devil May Cry called DMC made by Ninja Theory.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
This is one of your hottest takes, I think.
It's one of my hottest takes. And if I may add that Devil May Cry 6, in comparison to that, was a pretty bland game.
Five, you mean, yeah?
Sorry, 5. Oh, yeah. I apologize. 5.
You're making Devil May Cry 6.
Yes. Exactly. That was Devil May Cry 5, not 6, of course, because the other one was just called DMC. So yeah, I do think that Devil May Cry cries for a new development team. And since like the standout features of this series are pretty much over-the-top action and like a very intricate combat system that requires you to memorize combats and to be like really finicky and quick with your fingers. And it's also a lot about style. It's just about being cool. It's not so much about you want to like save the world or whatever. It's just that you want to get into that flow of combat that feels almost like a rhythm game. And it's all about, you know, how stylish can you be? Platinum games are perfect for that. So unfortunately, Ninja Theory is no longer available, as far as I'm aware, for the Devil May Cry series. They've had their shot. I think they did a fantastic job, but many others disagree. I think Platinum Games can pull it off. I think Platinum Games can realize the potential of Devil May Cry.
Well, there's definite precedent, right? Because, of course, Hideki Kamiya and Bayonetta have the Platinum Games connection. So that's definitely in their wheelhouse to do this kind of style of, you know, really over-the-top, funny, stylistic gameplay. I think it'd be great. Because maybe that's what Devil May Cry needs is, you know, just take the, sort of like what you were saying with Pokemon, take the franchise and just give it to a different development team and see what they do with it. Because seems like it worked with Ninja Theory.
Yeah, it seems to be a common thread here that we kind of take games that exist or franchises of which we think they are running a little bit stale and then reinvigorating them with the perspective of a new development team.
Yeah, I think that'd be a lot of fun. I think, you know, Hideki Kamiya is actually coming up kind of because he's got Resident Evil connections. He's got Metal Gear Rising connections. So maybe we just need Hideki Kamiya to make all our games and give them to Platinum Games.
Just make all of them. Just make all of them. Next Rayman game, just make that as well. That's fine.
Yeah, that'd be great. Oh, man.
What have you got on the list?
Well, my next one, so as I am contractually obligated to bring up Kingdom Hearts at least once every day.
There it is, Kingdom Hearts.
So Kingdom Hearts is already a fun mashup, right? It's Square Enix meets Disney. That's kind of the whole crux of its existence. But now that we're in a new era of Kingdom Hearts, where my theory anyway is that we're moving away from the Disney stuff. It seems that with the end of Kingdom Hearts 3 and the most recent game, Melody of Memory, they're kind of leaving the breadcrumbs that there's actually like a specific line where Riku is told he's going to a new place and he says, oh, maybe I should bring Mickey. And the character says, Mickey can't help you where you're going. To me, that feels very coded as we're going into Square Enix territory now. We're not doing as much Disney stuff. So if that's true, that's a bold move. And when I was thinking about how you could do a different directorial shift, the person who came to my mind immediately is the lovable weirdo Yoko Taro, creator of Nier and Drakengard. I think a Kingdom Hearts game as told by Yoko Taro would be a really cool philosophical evolution in the story of Kingdom Hearts. He is so preoccupied with what it means to control an avatar, what it means to be kind of a chess piece in a game that you're controlling, or maybe you have less control than you think. And that is exactly where Kingdom Hearts has been going for the past 20 years. And I think Yoko Taro could really bring it home in a way that would be weird and obtuse. And basically everything that people think Kingdom Hearts is, Yoko Taro could probably take it in that direction.
I think so too. I think that potential is definitely there because Kingdom Hearts to me always feels like, well, it literally is two worlds. It is this kind of very approachable, accessible, and immediately cute and entertaining angle of Disney with lots of familiar franchises and series. And on the other hand, it is a kind of like abstract, over-the-top story that seems to be very intricate, at least from an outsider's perspective. I've only played the first two Kingdom Hearts games, which is apparently completely insufficient to understand even the basics of the narrative. And the thing is that I do think that Yoko Taro would give an interesting angle on this. However, economically, it would be a disaster.
Yes.
The thing is that because if you do that, then I think you would bring along a whole lot of people that are into Kingdom Hearts, such as yourself, but you would at the same time lose everyone who enjoys Kingdom Hearts for the Disney tie-in.
Yeah.
It would be a spin-off, I suppose.
Yeah, kind of. I think it would be cool.
Mobile game.
A mobile card game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right, and I think this comes down to more of like a conversation of the future of Kingdom Hearts, because as we continue in this world absolutely dominated by Disney is getting, at least the way it seems, they're getting more and more iron gripped on their properties, and they're not as, when Kingdom Hearts originally came out, Disney was, you know, it's Disney, but it wasn't like the mega power that it is right now. It was still, it had its renaissance. It's obviously a big entertainment company, but it didn't own half of the entertainment world. And so now you kind of see it in Kingdom Hearts 3, where there's this reticence on Disney's behalf to give the freedom to kind of do what they did in the past games. And so as much as it would probably leave an audience out, I do think that the Kingdom Hearts audience who sticks around for the plot would stay around and kind of appreciate that Yoko Taro is taking it in a completely weird, different direction. So you're right. Economically, it would be a disaster, but artistically, it would be fantastic.
Artistically, it would be fantastic. It would be one for the critics, and it would probably be one of these games that would come out that would kind of fly under the radar, because people hear like an announcement of Kingdom Hearts and then they imagine like, okay, there's going to be Donald Duck or something. And then it turns out it's some weird creature that wears some kind of upside down mask. And
yeah. Emil shows up.
Yeah. And then it's like, what's going on here? And then there's like Sora in there, but it's kind of a grim alternative sort of reality where he doesn't know, I don't know who he is, for example. Well, yeah. I guess it's not new in the Kingdom Hearts series, but something along those lines. And ultimately, it all becomes very philosophical, and suddenly René Descartes makes an appearance.
we're going to this world. It's called France. We're going to learn all kinds of things about philosophy. Oh, man. Well,
yeah, having a cup of tea with Sartre.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
And then the thing is, that would be completely fantastic. It would be a game that, first, nobody really buys except for those that are super into either Kingdom Hearts or Yoko Taro works. And then, though, I could imagine this to be something that gets like pretty good reviews. It has its downsides. It's not for the mass audience, but it's obviously, it's in itself an enjoyable game. And then 5 years later, it basically is being remastered for the next generation of consoles, when people think, oh, wait, it's this. And then everybody thinks, hey, this is coming back. Kingdom Hearts something something.
Yeah.
Okay, that was this game that way back then flew under the radar. And all of a sudden, it's getting smashing reviews. That's the kind of story that I could imagine for it.
I think that's spot on. It would be the Nier treatment. It would be, and then the big game would be whatever the equivalent of Nier Automata would be. The follow-up would be the big one that gets people's attention.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a pipe dream, perhaps, but one that I relish.
I relish it with you. I would definitely play that. I've got one, a fairly abstract one. I'm not sure what this would be myself. But the thing is, I would like to see a mashup between the game developers at the Chinese Room and filmmaker David Lynch.
I love this idea.
This is just for those that can't really associate anything with the names. The Chinese Room, they made games such as Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, which is one of my favorite walking simulators, where you walk through a small British like village, and everyone has disappeared, and you are slowly unraveling the story of what happened to the people. It's not really a mystery in a sense that you want to know what happened, but it's more about taking in the sights and feeling and being exposed to this kind of sublime, sublime experience of being completely alone in this village and discovering the remnants of, well, whatever people left there, including parts of their souls. They also made Dear Esther and Amnesia, like very psychological games. And most recently, they made Little Orpheus, which completely flew under the radar. This is an Apple Arcade game that I also played. Stylistically inspired by, I think, you know, the early Russian silent film. And it's kind of a platformer. It goes into a completely different direction.
Interesting.
Then I thought, well, a walking simulator... I love walking simulators, but imagine it's stylistically inspired or in cooperation with David Lynch, because I think David Lynch is one of the filmmakers of our time that I very much appreciate. He did things such as Lost Highway, Blue Velvet.
Twin Peaks, of course.
The Twin Peaks series. And my favorite film by him would be Mulholland Drive. Yeah, these are all very niche in a sense that they are niche. Yeah, they have this very, like, you know, late 80s, mid 90s kind of feeling, and they are very mysterious.
Yes.
They are abstract. A David Lynch film is a film that you watch where you think at the beginning, okay, that's kind of creepy, that's kind of weird. And at the end, you have no idea anymore whose character is who.
Yeah. I'll come out and say David Lynch is one of, if not my favorite directors, and maybe one of my favorite artists of all time, because to hear him talk about his artistic creations is so sublime that all I can think when I hear him talk is, I wish he would make a video game. He'll never do it. He will never do it. But I really wish he would. He would be
but
so great at it.
He does, like, he's very much open to experimentation in certain ways.
It's true.
For example, I've seen a Netflix thing that he did. Where
with the monkey?
With the monkey. I don't remember the name anymore exactly, but it's
Jack,
like...
Jack, I think.
Something with Jack, yeah. It's an interview where David Lynch playing him, and he doesn't play himself, but he himself plays the role of, like, a detective who inquires into the misdoings or the misdeeds of a tiny monkey that basically can seemingly speak. It's completely absurd, surrealistic. It's in black and white and so on. It's really interesting. And I do think that the kind of mindset that applies to the art of David Lynch would lend itself perfectly to a walking simulator.
I agree. And I think that he's so adept at, I don't think there's ever been a creator, an artist, a filmmaker, a musician, anyone I can think of that has depicted what a dream feels and sounds like than David Lynch. And to have a walking simulator go through his machinations with how we perceive dreams and nightmares and other realities would be so great. And I know that you had that Radiohead experience, right?
Radiohead Kid Amnesia is what it's called.
I remember,
it's a free thing that you can play on. If you have a PS5 at home, dear listeners out there, you can download it just like that for free and walk through, let's say, the audio worlds and soundscapes of Radiohead.
And you said that's probably pretty close to what we're kind of imagining here.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. If there's the Chinese room developing a walking simulator in cooperation with David Lynch, I could definitely see Radiohead or Tom York composing the soundtrack.
Oh, I would love it. It would be, again, you talk about things that are maybe only for us. That would be, that would be so good.
It would definitely feel like a lucid dream. And at the same time, I would love if it had some kind of Twin Peaks influences of some character development and you explore maybe a small town and you unravel its weirdnesses. I actually am, like, it's been a while since I initially had this kind of idea that I would really love this kind of thing. So you may remember a game called Dreams.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a PlayStation game in which you can make your own small games. I reviewed that back when it came out a couple of years ago. And then the first game, like a walking simulator, like a very tiny one, like a 5-minute walking simulator called Package, which is very strongly inspired by Lynch, where you like you drive, you basically step outside the car while you're driving through the night, and you kind of walk around and the headlights are kind of blinding you, and you have to fix the engine, and suddenly you find like heels on the floor, like women's heels, and you walk down a small path where you find a package addressed to a woman, which you kind of have the urge to pick up and deliver to that woman. So you go back to the car where suddenly the leaves on the trees are like glowing as they wave through the wind. It's like really deep midnight kind of atmosphere. And then you drive off. That's the first part of this thing. I would have loved to continue. I started making a second part, but I don't want to talk about it for too long.
No, that sounds really cool.
This is the kind of vibe that I could imagine for such a game.
I would love it. Yeah, I think, you know, I did say he would never do it, but he's such a surprising man. I mean, it would have to be organic from him. He would have to. And plus, I think he's so in love with cinema as an art form. If you ever want to get lost down a YouTube rabbit hole, just look up David Lynch interviews, because he's one of the most fascinating people alive, in my opinion. And man, I would love a game by him.
And he's got an amazing haircut.
He sure does.
Okay, let's move on. What else do you have on the list?
Yeah, I have one that it's the same game, same developer, but different time periods. So I want current day Naughty Dog to make a Jak and Daxter game again.
Why would you want that?
Because I think I'm a huge fan of Jak and Daxter. I love those games. And to me, there's a lot of connective tissue in their storytelling in those games that went on in their later game, in Last of Us and the Uncharted series and things like this, where there's certain themes that they're looking into, like destiny and history and things coming back to haunt you and all this kind of thing. So I think it would be really cool. I'm not talking about a gritty, dark reboot. I don't like talking about, you know, stuff like that. But Jak and Daxter made by Naughty Dog today, with a really poured over story and this open world of the Jak and Daxter world, whether it's from the first game or from the second and third game, I think would be a lot of fun. You could even do, really, you could do all three stories in one retelling. And I think it would be a cool love letter to where Naughty Dog had this fun transition from Crash Bandicoot to their serious stuff. Because that's what I see Jak and Daxter as, is the weird adolescent years where they were trying a lot of things out and kept what they liked and got rid of what they didn't.
That is true. When you think of the games that Naughty Dog made, it's very much like, almost like a child growing up.
Very
Crash
much.
Crash Bandicoot to Jak and Daxter to Uncharted to then The Last of Us.
The Last of Us.
Where you completely reach the nihilistic realization that there's no meaning in it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's one issue I see with that idea, and that is Ratchet and Clank.
Ah, okay.
Because I feel like, I mean, I only played the first Jak and Daxter game, and I feel like Ratchet and Clank by Insomniac Games is kind of, they kind of won the competition between these two series, and they are now filling this kind of slot in the Sony roster already, you know?
Here's my counterpoint, because I would agree with you if it was only Jak and Daxter 1, because Jak and Daxter 1, well, Jak and Daxter is a very Banjo-Kazooie Ratchet and Clank style game, where it's a collectathon. There's a silent protagonist with his chatty sidekick. Jak 2 came along and said, we know that people love Grand Theft Auto. We're going to make this the edgiest game in the world. Jack's going to say things like shoot and darn, and it's going to be really edgy. And then Jak 3 kind of came back and said, okay, we're going to put the edginess away for a little bit. It's still got some edge to it, but we're not proving ourselves. And I think Jak 3 was a more grown-up version of this story, where they kind of put the edginess aside. And I think that Jak and Daxter, with that tone of, you know, sort of a young adult Jak, maybe 20, 25, who's trying to figure out who he is in relation to this crazy history that's going on in the world, would be kind of right in their wheelhouse. And I would like to see them do that, and I think that that can exist with Ratchet and Clank, because Ratchet and Clank feels more like a Pixar movie to me.
Yeah, I was just struck as soon as you mentioned his age, like, you know, how old he would be and how he would maybe also traverse an open world to basically could be a wonderful telling of adolescence, really, of coming to adulthood, coming of age story, kind of.
It's, to me, that's what the trilogy is because we see Jack as a very young kid in the story, in the second game. And I guess spoilers for the Jack series, but it's a story of kind of cyclical destiny where they, boiling it down, they end up creating this prophecy by trying to avoid the negative outcome. It's one of those stories where it feeds into itself. And the third game really launches into that, where there's this historical figure that you keep hearing about, this guy, Mar, who created this city to protect everybody. And you come to find out that was Jack, right? And it was this legacy that kind of built up and got told through time. And it turns out he was the one to do it. And then it got thrown into the future. Lots of stuff like that. So
still sounds like Ratchet and Clank.
But I will say that you're spot on, because it is the story of somebody realizing who he is. And I think that would be a very cool story to tell of coming of age at that particular point in your life where you're an adult technically, but you don't really know who you are.
I could even imagine them doing something like, you know, they did these smaller games that tied into the Uncharted series.
Mm.
I forgot their titles just now. They were basically like add-ons, or like, you know, The Last of Us. I forgot its title. The Ellie DLC, basically.
Yep.
Mm. I could imagine maybe taking something. Imagine Naughty Dog. They probably will not return to Jack and Daxter that way, because they went off into a completely different direction by now with Uncharted and The Last of Us. But I would find it very interesting for them to kind of revisit that world and that lore and these stories in like a smaller, compact game, like in, let's say, 6 to 8 hours thing.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, something of around that length.
Yeah, it would be a cool thing for them to do. And I think, you know, if now Crash Bandicoot's not in their hands anymore, it's being developed by Toys with Bob, or Toys by Bob, something like that. But I think that shows that people love this IP that Naughty Dog has put out. And I think there's plenty of Jack and Daxter fans that would be willing to pay for that and play through it. I know I'd be one of them.
Well, I've got two more on the list. These two are a little bit more vague in conceptualization in comparison to the ones that I've done so far. Number four that I have on here is maybe something that's quite niche, but I think it would be interesting. It is about a series that I played when I was a teenager called Broken Sword.
Are you aware
of Broken Sword?
No, I'm not familiar with this one.
First of all, I want to say to all of the listeners out there that are versed in the German language, this is the original title of the series, Baphomet's Fluch. It had a completely different title in German. It was like The Curse of Baphomet, but its original title was Broken Sword. It's by a British development studio called Revolution Studios, and it was a series, I think, in the mid-90s to mid-2000s. There were like 5 entries in the series. It was kind of paralleling Monkey Island, but little bit less silly than Monkey Island. It was a little bit more serious. It was not entirely serious. It still had this kind of, you know, point and click comic style thing to it, but it was not as over the top and fantastical as Monkey Island was.
Mm.
And that's what I really liked about it. And I thought of this series recently while playing a completely different game, because I played Hades, and I very much enjoy the character designs and the world designs that Supergiant Games produce.
Sure.
Right? They made Bastion, Transistor, Hades, and Pyre, I think. Pyre was in between.
Yeah.
That was this kind of game. They are very experimental with their genres. They make like isometric action games with intense combat. They make a game that's about a fictional kind of football game with Pyre.
Yeah.
And I thought something that they could probably do really well, since they are so good at crafting engaging stories with interesting and very beautiful hand-drawn characters, is a point-and-click adventure.
I'm thinking of their, because I'm not familiar with Broken Sword, but I'm thinking of that particular style. And I would love to see a return to point and click with that kind of art. That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Just imagine with this kind of design, a point and click adventure that is set a little bit more like it could be in contemporary France or the UK potentially. And it's probably going to be about, it's a little bit Indiana Jones-like in the sense that there's some kind of crime or some kind of mystery that needs to be solved, and it's told in a way that is rather humorous, but it's not completely over the top. It's not like Pick Up Monkey,
yeah, right. example,
you know?
yeah.
But yeah, I think that would make for a really charming game, especially because the Broken Sword series has kind of gone off track. They experimented with various different styles, and recently, I think Broken Sword 5 was one that was not particularly well appreciated. There's a Kickstarter campaign currently running from the, I think, original creator of the series who wants to do a kind of different or kind of return to form. There's also the potential of a Broken Sword 6. It's all not very clear. So I think Supergiant Games could really bring this series back to its roots by delivering a very beautiful point-and-click adventure.
Not to mention the writing that they would bring would be fantastic.
Yeah.
So
the writing, the music.
Yeah, I'd love it. Well, I have, going in a different direction from the relaxing point and click to a frantic Dynasty Warrior style game.
Ah, Dynasty Warrior.
Yeah, I would love, and I'm surprised this doesn't exist. It may be in the works, I don't know. A Final Fantasy Musou type game. So Musou is the genre for like Hyrule Warriors, Dynasty Warriors, the... You're an overpowered character kind of hacking and slashing through hundreds of enemies.
Yeah, it's from what I understand, these games are very repetitive in the sense that you slash hundreds of enemies.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like something that from the outside at first looks rather mind-numbing because you're just doing the same things over and over again. But it has a certain, very specific charm and appeal that has very much grown on you, right?
Yes, very much. Especially after playing Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, that game, because you're right, from the outside, it does look very repetitive because you're just hacking and slashing through all these different enemies. But the way that that game sets it up is that different characters have different abilities and different monsters have different weaknesses. So the real fun of it is getting into the groove of getting rid of those hordes of enemies as quickly and efficiently as possible. And I think that Koei Tecmo has been on kind of a run of these lately because they did Hyrule Warriors. They also did Persona 5 Strikers, which is a great Musou-style game.
Which is actually this month. We're recording in February 2022 on PS Plus, right?
I think so.
I downloaded that on my console, Persona 5 Strikers.
Really fun follow-up to Persona 5 and a really fun Musou-style game. And I think that Final Fantasy would be a lot of fun. And what I'm imagining... did you ever play?
No.
No. So that was.
I've heard of it, but.
It was kind of middling, but it was Final Fantasy's fighting game. And I think that Final Fantasy sort of offshoot games are always kind of middling, but they're always really fun. So I think that Koei Tecmo, clearly they have a relationship with Square Enix now that they're doing the Neo style Strangers of Paradise. I think it would be great if the next step was a big hack and slash beat 'em up like a Dynasty Warriors game.
Now, here's the question. Would this be an original story within the Final Fantasy, let's call it a framework, or would it be a tie-in to pre-existing Final Fantasy lore and characters?
What I'm imagining would, because Hyrule Warriors is its own story, right? But
with Zelda characters, right?
Right.
In Hyrule.
Yeah. And with the pre-existing lore and stuff. It's its own story, but it exists in that framework, like you say. Same with Persona 5 Strikers. That's an actual sequel to Persona 5. But what I'm envisioning is, similar to Dissidia, all of the main characters from the different Final Fantasy series, they're all... Actually, a perfect parallel to this is the Dragon Quest Warriors game that came out, where characters from the different games... for some contrived reason, are all in the same world, and they have their story that they're all working towards, but that way you can play as Cloud or Yuna or, you know, Terra, different Final Fantasy characters with their different skill sets. It'd be fun.
I want to play as Auron.
Oh, that'd be Auron, so great.
Auron from Final Fantasy X, who was always... Yeah. When I started playing Final Fantasy X, there was this this grumpy man who always had his arm in a kind of, how did you call that? Like a sling. Yeah, he was kind of like,
it's really just his jacket, but
it's really just his jacket. Yeah. And it's kind of just, he doesn't really have an injury or something. It's just for being cool, as far as I'm aware. But yeah, it would be really amazing, especially coming up with an idea of how to tell a story that merges or that brings these different characters and these different worlds, because Final Fantasy is always set in a completely different world, usually, like the main entries at least, to kind of meddle them all together. Yeah, I think I could imagine that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it'd be, if nothing else, it would be like Dissidia, where it's not a groundbreaking Final Fantasy story, but it's fun.
What would it be called? It must be something with warriors.
Yeah.
Final Warriors. Final Fantasy Warriors.
No, I know what it would be called. You ready? The Warriors of Light.
Why the Warriors of Light?
Because that's from Final Fantasy I, the main heroes are the Warriors of Light. That's a motif throughout the games.
Oh.
That would be perfect.
Okay.
Yep.
Final Fantasy I, I've only played that for like 10 minutes and I thought, oh no.
Fair enough.
That was still, the first Final Fantasy game was still like a bit, it had a bit of Zelda style thing, right? Going for it. A
little bit. It was still turn-based, but yeah, it was a lot of going from town to town, going into dungeons. It's a good game in its own right. And they still, I mean, every game pretty much references the Warrior of Light, the main character from that game, is a big returning motif in Final Fantasy XIV. That's what your characters are called, basically. It shows up in a lot of different, Final Fantasy 15 has a lot of references. So it always, well, Strangers of Paradise, this new Koei Tecmo joint that they're doing, is referencing the Warriors of Light in the first game. So I think ripe for opportunity.
Dropping some video game history here, video game knowledge. Yes. Amazing. Well, my last one is about a series of which many people wish that it would return, including myself. Mm. And that is Silent Hill.
Yes, applause.
Because Silent Hill was great for a long time, and it kind of fell from grace. Now, there were quite some hopes that it might come back and it might return to form in a cooperation between Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro. Now, we know that that didn't really pan out for the time being. They did this wonderful teaser of PT, extremely creepy in itself, which has been completely obliterated by Konami in a desperate attempt to make it go away, that nobody shall ever hear that this thing was actually, that this thing actually existed, which only made it even creepier and more famous. Well done, Konami. But the thing is, it might still happen. There are some indications, we spoke about that on the show as well, that there are still some indications and some clues dropped by Kojima and by Guillermo del Toro that they are still kind of thinking in that direction. Yeah. However, I envision something differently. I think this could be amazing, but let's assume it falls through. It doesn't happen. Then which kind of developer studio could come around to bring Silent Hill back on the map? And I think, literally, that would be Ninja Theory. Again, I bring up Ninja Theory, because Ninja Theory did Hellblade.
Yeah.
And Hellblade, I think, is a game that is very much about, it's a game about psychosis. It's a game about madness. It has an intense but very minimalistic combat system. It doesn't have an interface at all and plays tricks on your mind constantly, including the feature of voice hearing, so that you have binaural audios. You constantly hear voices coming from all directions while you play that game. It's very intense. It's a proper indie game because it's made entirely without a publisher. By now, they have been purchased by Microsoft, much to my despair.
Yes.
But what if Microsoft would say, or Sony would say, here, we're going to give you lots of money, and you make a new Silent Hill game. You re-envision what Silent Hill is. Put in all the expertise that you have when it comes to storytelling, to making characters, to crafting worlds. Make a very small scale Silent Hill, which basically drags players through a cascade of various different forms of psychological horror. Oh, that would be great.
That would be fantastic. You know, there's there's a reason that Silent Hill 2 is lauded as the best one, and I agree with that. And it's because Silent Hill 2 is the essence of the idea boiled down to its bare essentials and taken to its greatest heights. And the bare essentials of Silent Hill is that this is a place where you are confronted with your own trauma, your own demons. They show up as literal monsters, but it's unclear what's real and what isn't. And at the end of it, you kind of have to put things together for yourself. I think that if you just take that idea and give it to a developer that's shown that they can be effectively creepy and effectively kind of tormenting in the way that they set up the game, beautiful. I would love that. Give it to anybody who understands that. That's that's my philosophy with it.
So that would mean, yeah, of course, yeah, they also made Devil May Cry beforehand. So they also, they have shown in various different ways how they can handle psychological horror and intriguing combat. One of the downsides that Silent Hill series always had is that its combat system was always very clunky. In Silent Hill 1 and 2, this kind of still plays into the charm of the games a little bit. In later installments, it became more of a chore the more people realized that it's not going to improve, really.
Yeah.
So I think Silent Hill by Ninja Theory, that's my vision.
Mm. I would love it. Well, my last one to round us out, I don't have a title. I don't have a game. I just want a collaboration between Suda51 and Hideo Kojima.
So, a match made in heaven.
I think so. I know that there, I looked into this before this because I was seeing, did they have any collaboration? Because it almost seems like they, you almost think like, surely they must have, right? And they did have one endeavor. They made, this is the most them thing. They made a radio play together.
Of course. Yeah. Of course they would.
So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a real game. And all I can think is that, to me, they seem very similarly minded in terms of how they produce satire and how they take genre tropes and either turn them on their head or turn them up to 11. And I think like a game with the aesthetics of Lollipop Chainsaw, but with the story of a Hideo Kojima game would be a romp. And I would love to play. And the music would be fantastic. No doubt.
He wasn't involved with that small, that was also very Lynchian, like a Japanese game that where you were a detective and you were like investigating in a small.
No, that's
not Suda51.
No, that's Deadly Premonition. That's a guy named Sweary, I think.
Ah, Deadly Premonition. Okay, I was misattributing it.
Although now that you mention it, if you threw him in there, I think it'd be pretty fun too.
Yeah, all three of them. Suda51,
Sweary.
Kojima, and Sweary, basically having like a weekend where they are like just drinking and having fun and playing around with ideas and conceptualizing a game. That would definitely be a very interesting one because all three of them, I would say, are involved in the domain of satire, of commentary on US-American popular culture. This would be completely weird and very interesting.
It would. In fact, I think if you took, and this is how I'll end it, if you took No More Heroes and you took the American satire, the video game satire, you put in Kojima's incredible gameplay, and then you threw in Sweary's weirdness, what a great weekend that would be.
that would be another game specifically for video game critics. Here's someone that will be in the museum 10 years in the future. Dear listeners out there, I hope you enjoyed listening to our visions of mashups that do not exist. What are your ideas? Which kind of games would you like to mash? Which kind of game series and video game developers would be an excellent combination? Please let us know. You can reach out on studyingpixels.com/contact. If you want to support us, then you can also get Studying Pixels Plus. This is where we provide you not only with monthly bonus episodes, but also a beautiful sticker that says, I am Studying Pixels. You can put it on your laptop, you can put it on your water flask, on your desk, or on some kind of lantern in the city to, you know, stick it over a annoying swastika that some kind of douchebag has scribbled on there.
There you go.
So that's one way to make use of this sticker. We're looking forward to hear from you, and we will then talk again next week. See you then, everyone.
See you then.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.